My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you.
It's always great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Let's start with the president's latest journey away from the White House. It wasn't long ago we saw his bus trip to Virginia and North Carolina. This time he was out west in Nevada and California, Colorado. And at each step along the way, he had a new executive initiative saying we can't afford to wait anymore for what he considers an obstructive Republican Congress to move forward on ideas like helping folks who are underwater with their mortgages refinance easier, making repayment of student loans streamlined and a little bit cheaper for those who are having a hard time finding work. And he's got ideas for helping returning veterans get jobs a little bit easier than they have been. Republicans say these are basically political gimmicks and they're really not going to accomplish much. And they've passed a lot of things that a Democratic Senate just simply won't act on. So, John, I guess the question is, how much do you think the president convinced folks on this trip that he's working and the Congress isn't?
If I'm a little bit cynical, please remember, Greg, that after covering the White House and seeing both pronouncements of his spokesman, Jay Carney, as well as the cameo appearances by the president himself, nothing really fazes me anymore. The president can go out in the public, he can bring the teleprompter along, and he can make all of these comments about what needs to be done and say that he's going over the heads of the recalcitrant Republicans in Congress and going to the people. But nothing new is offered. It's not the rhetoric that's at fault, it's the policy. And certainly that was apparent in the vote that killed his jobs bill, in which three Democrats joined with all 47 Republicans to stop it dead in its tracks.
And so what do you expect now from the Republicans or from the president? Just more of the same, and it'll be up to the people next year to decide? Or do you expect there to be some common ground beyond trade agreements and scrapping the withholding tax?
Well, I think on both of those points, that's significant common ground. Don't dismiss either of those things as small. The trade agreement had wide bipartisan support after languishing in the Senate for many years, although there was some grumbling that the administration waited a long time to call it up. And as for the withholding, that is very, very significant because, again, it is the first time on an economic and taxation measure that the administration and Congress, Republicans in Congress, I should add, work together. Now, that said, I don't see much more beyond that because we are almost in an election year. If you turn in these debates that are on every week, you would think we're right in the middle of an election year. So I just do not see anything coming.
John, let's shift now to the presidential race. And it was thought back in late September that Herman Cain was the latest flavor of the week in terms of a more conservative challenger to Mitt Romney as the establishment choice. That week has turned into at least a month. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I attribute it to the charisma that Herman Cain is displaying and his ability to take little things and make them deliver. I'd love to see a cost-benefit ratio in terms of poll numbers after that commercial he ran with the campaign aide smoking a cigarette. He basically took a shot at Ron Paul's anti-federal government, anti-regulation constituency, and with all of the discussion on one ad, probably gained strength from that just simply because it got the chattering class and the punditocracy going strong. I'd say Herman Cain is someone very much like Wendell Willkie in 1940, the last Republican nominee for president who never held elective office or a major appointive office. In a sense, he's not organized. Sometimes his position on issues are clear, but people are quite captivated with his persona.
John, Rick Perry followed up Herman Cain's 999 tax plan with his own 2020 plan, a 20% income rate for a flat tax on the income side, and then 20% also for the corporate side. He'd do away with cap gains and dividends and Social Security taxes. How big of a step is this in his campaign?
Well, one is hearing this phrase frequently. Today is the first day of the rest of the Perry campaign. He had some help from Mr. Flat Tax himself, former presidential candidate Steve Forbes, and he's brought a new campaign team on, Nelson Warfield and Tony Fabrizio, two people I've known for decades in covering campaigns, and they are tough operators. I never wrote Rick Perry off, although I would say that he started with a rather modest beginning. And I do believe this will help for the simple reason every survey, every poll, every post-debate interview shows that there's a lot of undecideds out there, and they write no one off and are willing to listen.
John, let's move to one bit of Senate election news for next year. Earlier this year, Florida Congressman Connie Mack said he wouldn't run. Today we find out that he's changed his mind. He will get in that race, hopes to win the Republican nomination to run against Democratic Senator Bill Nelson. I'm sure it's not welcome news to the likes of George Lemieux and Adam Hasner and Colonel McAllister, but what kind of odds do you give Congressman Mack for the nomination, and does it radically transform the race?
Well, if his last name were Gizzy or Corumbus, we wouldn't even talk about it. On the other hand, one has to note that this is someone who has a name that's beloved in Florida, albeit a long time ago. I covered the elder Connie Mack when he was a House member and later two-term United States Senator, and the son is the next Connie Mack, and the name still packs a wallop. He also comes from a very vote-heavy region of the Sunshine State. So my guess is he will be strong. On the other hand, historically, voters don't like a candidate who gets out of a race, changes his mind, and gets back in, and the I word has got to come up. Congressman Mack, while a conservative across the board, has never taken a hard line on illegal immigration and been highly critical of those who do. That usually doesn't play well in Republican primaries. We'll find out.
Now we'll see how the others use that issue in the coming weeks and months. Florida has a relatively late primary. So, John, let's talk about a couple other issues very quickly before we run out of time. A new poll out this week from CBS and the New York Times suggesting that 43% of Americans support Occupy Wall Street, only 27% oppose what they're doing. How surprising is that to you as a conservative?
Not surprising at all, because, again, how many of those people actually know what is behind the Occupy Wall Street movement? And I can say that. I don't know what's behind them either. I know there's probably a lot of well-meaning Americans who've gone through these tragic times of losing a job and being unable to get back on their feet. Everyone, it seems, has a family member who's experienced that tragic situation. They have every right to go out and make noise and demonstrate. On the other hand, when one sees that in 72 cities just 2 weeks ago, the Occupy movements were calling for the end of capitalism, I have to wonder whether people who worked in corporations before or small businesses really believe that. Let's just separate the movement from the individuals involved.
John, last question. Hopping across the pond, there was a lot of concern this week that there might not be an agreement among the Eurozone folks about helping Greece and getting the bailout plan back in gear for another round. Eventually, they did come to a deal. Wall Street seems to like it. Is this a step in the right direction or just delaying the inevitable?
The market was surging today, and it would seem as though the effort, particularly with the imprimatur of German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who sits atop the strongest and largest economy in Europe, there are signs of at least hope out there. And while there were demonstrations in Greece against the cuts that were made in their budget and the fact that people might not be able to have a median retirement age of 55 anymore, there was general approval in the world that they're serious about making changes. My one worry is this just might be temporary, and of course we're looking at a situation in Italy where those changes have not been completed, and the government of Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi appears to be teetering. We'll find out soon enough, and believe me, we'll feel it if it doesn't go well.
John, on that grim note, we'll leave it there. Thanks as always for your time.
Someone who usually ends on a positive note but found it impossible in these dire economic times, I'm John Gizzi on Capitol Hill.
John Gizzi is political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily.